I was gargling coffee to start the show. I have a piece of granola stuck in my throat. So the only thing that I drink during the show is coffee. So I was gargling the coffee to jar loose the granola. Hi, I'm Greg Wyszynski. Welcome to Merrick vs. Wyszynski. Merrick's off today, hence the gargling. And there's a lot to talk about, folks. But we will have Sean Leahy in a moment from Puck Daddy. We will have Bobby Holik joining us, a Puck Daddy radio favorite and a Merrick vs. Wyszynski radio favorite joining us bottom of the hour. And then Nick Kostanicka from the NHL GM meetings later in the hour as well. A couple things right off the top. Sidney Crosby back Thursday against the New York Rangers. There was much rejoicing, obviously, for this. I really hope that there isn't a complete culture shock for Sid when he realizes that his line mates are Tyler Kennedy and Matt Cook, and that the trade deadline has, in fact, passed. There can be no rental, no Billy Guerin or Marian Hossa to save the day. But we imagine he will move up the chart at some point, because the Penguins have won 9 in a row. Again, the rich get richer. They get winning 9 in a row. They get Sidney Crosby back, but they don't want to break up the two top lines. So Sid will center Cook and Kennedy against the Rangers. Last played all the way back on December 5th. He's been that was 8 games. It was his big comeback. Then he was out with what we thought was a concussion. Turned out to be a soft tissue bruise in the neck. And Ray Shiro says today that Sid feels better now coming back than he did the last time he came back, which I suppose is either good news or discouraging news that he felt like shit the last time he came back. Oh, wells. So they become remarkably better. They were my cup pick from a cup final pick, I should say, from the East before the season, for this precise reason, that I felt that Sid would come back. He would rejoin that lineup. They're already one of the best teams in hockey playing without him. There's going to be a little adjustment period, I'm sure. He comes back, and then all of a sudden you're talking about really one of the most devastatingly good teams in the league. I mean, their back end is solid. Fleury is a money goalie in the playoffs. We all know what Gino's done this year. They moved to the top of the charts, and his coming back puts the rest of the Eastern Conference on notice. I am very confident that the Penguins will be the candidate for the Stanley Cup to emerge from the Eastern Conference. Not so much confident about my other pick, the San Jose Sharks. Even despite that amazing victory over the powerhouse Edmonton Oilers last night, still not convinced that the Sharks are going to be able to rally and make it through the Western Conference, or even qualify for the Western Conference playoffs, being that there's like one spot open. So Sid back Thursday, that's very big news. I'm in a weird place with that, by the way. So he's back Thursday. That'll be a big news story. We'll cover it on Puck Daddy. Leahy, who's going to join us in a few minutes, will be there to cover the game. And then Saturday, I'm up in Jersey as a fan. It's my dad and me at the Devils Penguins game. It's the game where they rock the Christmas tree jerseys every year. And so my dad and I, St. Patrick's Day, we'll get soused. We'll go to the game. I will be there rooting against Sidney Crosby as a fan on Saturday after celebrating Hockey Christ Child's return on Thursday against the Rangers. So it's just one of those little juggling acts that the journalist/fan must do. Other big news today from the NHL. Reports are that the path has been cleared for Alexander Radulov to return to the Nashville Predators. Now, this is based off of Pierre LeBrun of ESPN reporting that Bill Daly and David Poile met during the GM meetings, and that it appears as though the NHL will not require waivers if Radulov returns from the KHL to fulfill the final year of his contract, and that he would be, this is the key, he'd be eligible for both the regular season and the playoffs. Now, why the playoffs? Elliot Friedman noted in his 30 Thoughts column on Monday that Radulov was actually on the Nashville Predators reserve list, hence he is eligible to come back and play in the playoffs. So David Poile had his ducks in the row. There's been some consternation and concern from other fan bases about Radulov coming back, as if there's something nefarious going on here by the Nashville Predators, as if we're back to Rea Ruotsalainen being shuttled back and forth between Edmonton and Europe back in the day. It's not that. Listen, a couple reasons why this is completely fine and no one should be pitching a fit about Radulov, okay? First off is the fact that the Predators made a concerted effort to get him back. They wanted him back. They went, they met him. They clearly wanted him to return this season or previous season. So it's not as if they were stashing him over in Europe waiting for this thing to go down. Second of all, this notion of they've gotten away with not having his money on the cap all season. Did we all forget this guy's on basically a rookie contract? I mean, he makes less than $1 million. Would it have crippled the Nashville Predators to have that contract under cap for a full season? He could have been playing in Omsk. He could have been in Siberia, and the cap hit could have been on their cap, and they would have been fine. So I think all of this talk about this being some kind of a scheme and bad precedent or whatever, it's nonsense. It's just a bunch of people that are scared shitless now because the Nashville Predators, A, score more than anybody gives them credit for, and B, are going to have a winger who can create his own offense now on that roster and on that power play. So scary times for the Western Conference if Radulov comes back, because that guy has matured as a player like nobody's business over in the KHL. The third bit of news today, before we get to GM meeting stuff with Leahy, Sean Avery. Now, Sean Avery was on Bravo Television's Watch What Happens Live last night. He was a guest with Nicole Richie, two very relevant people here in 2012. And he told the audience, and he told an email question or a Facebook question regarding his future in hockey. Sean Avery said last night on this web-based television series, "I am officially retired. I threw my skates in the Hudson River," and that led to a rather whimsical exchange between Sean Avery and Nicole Richie about whether or not he meant that he threw his skates in Kate Hudson's face, which is, I don't know, revealing a little bit more about the Richie-Hudson dynamic than I wanted to know. Did he actually retire? Is he actually going to retire? Mark Spector of Sportsnet, the company that houses this fine podcast, got in touch with Pat Morris, Avery's agent, and said that his client does not plan on filing retirement papers with the NHLPA. Avery, because he's Avery, goes to Larry Brooks of the New York Post and says his post-hockey career will start when his contract expires this summer and that it wasn't a joke. Yes, he's retiring at the end of the season, and that's okay. Now, he'll be a UFA. There are going to be teams out there that probably would like to at least take a sniff, see what Sean Avery smells like, see if he fits in with their plans. But maybe he's right, man. Maybe it has always been as we thought it was, which is that it was the New York Rangers or bust for Sean Avery as an NHL player. And I guess we'll see what happens. Joining us now on the line, our good friend, a partner in crime, the associate editor of Puck Daddy. He is Mr. Sean Leahy, a.k.a. a happy Penguins fan. How are you, Leahy?
I am so happy that the Penguins are getting back the third-line plugger in Sidney Crosby. Hello?
I do not hear Mr. Leahy. Oh, Wells. Well, that's sad.
Hello?
Oh, there you are. Where'd you go, man?
Hey, I'm right here.
Oh, my God. You weren't saying anything. I was confused.
I was still celebrating the Penguins getting back a third-line center today.
But do you understand?
Crosby.
Do you understand that I'm flying solo today and dead air just made me shit? I've actually shit my pants. I'm actually now worried about the upholstery on my office chair. So Crosby comes back, third line center. My question to you, sir, is 9-game winning streak, top two lines going well. Is there going to be an adjustment period, do you think, between Sid and the Penguins? They have played many, many more games sans Crosby than with Crosby.
I don't know. I think the fact that they're putting them on the third line and keeping those two lines intact, the top two lines intact, have been just going crazy. I think that'll help. They'll let Crosby ease back into the lineup as well as let the rest of the guys kind of, you know, ease back into him being back into the lineup. And you know, him being on the line with Matt Cook obviously will give him a little bit of protection, I'm sure, these next couple of games because they've got a tough stretch of games. They've got the Rangers tomorrow, Devils Saturday, Flyers on Sunday. So not only are it going to be tough games, but they're also divisional games too.
That's true. It's going to be a very tough game against the Devils on Saturday. And of course, I'm trying to figure out exactly what kind of protection Matt Cook provides, being that he's a Lady Bing candidate this year. But that's neither here nor there. Gino Malkin, my pet theory on Gino Malkin has long been that he has had an outstanding season because the spotlight has been his. Now Sidney Crosby is back. He's going to have to share the spotlight. How do you see life changing for Gino Malkin with Sidney Crosby back in the lineup?
I think they're just going to keep on doing what they're doing. They've been together so long. They've obviously excelled when one's been out of the lineup, which is pretty funny to see. But I don't think it's going to be a problem. I mean, there's after a few games, I'm sure Quaresma he's done in the past. If depending on a goal or two, he might throw Crosby up in Malkin and maybe drop Kunitz down, so we'll have Crosby, Neil, and Malkin together. But, you know, Malkin's going to keep going on because his line's been rolling with Neil and Chris Kunitz. Same thing with the second line. So I don't see any of the attention that's going to be going over to Sid for the next little while affecting anything with Geno's game at all.
As Sid comes back, Leahy, Ray Shiro says he comes back feeling better than he did the first time. Obviously, there's been a little bit of a difference in his treatment between in this absence than the previous absence, because they were able to identify the deep soft tissue bruise that may have been causing his concussion symptoms. Are you confident that we're going to get more than 8 games out of Sid this time, or do you think it's still all bets are off? Do you think the injury this time was different than the big old double concussion that he had with Steckel and Hedman?
Yeah, I just think with guys coming back from concussions, we just don't know. You never know, especially in Sid's case, considering, you know, the 2 hits he's got and everything, and the one against the Bruins back in December that kind of, you know, took him out of the lineup again. We just don't know. I don't think we know that much about head injuries these days. You know, we're still getting educated on the subject that, who knows, it could be the simplest of hits or not even something that's so vicious that could, for whatever reason, just knock something loose in the brain and, you know, he's out, you know, he's getting symptoms again and he's out for the next couple of games or whatever. I just don't think we know. And obviously after the 8-game comeback and him being back out of the lineup, I think the doctors and the Penguins will take a different track this time around, and I'll just keep a very close eye on how he's feeling and his kind of day-to-day routine, and just hope for the best and hope that his comeback is like that of, you know, many guys that have been able to come back for extended period of times and have succeeded. It's, you know, look at a guy like David Perron, who came back at that long absence, and he's been playing great for the Blues. So hopefully for the Penn's sake and for Crosby's sake and for the NHL's sake, that this is this is the last time Sid will be gone with any head injuries for such a long period of time.
Yeah, but the other thing is that Perron's a better player. I'm kidding, of course.
Sidney
Crosby, I know, sick burn, right? I'm going to ask you a series of yes or no questions about Sidney Crosby and the Penguins. I just want a yes or no, okay?
Okay.
Will Sidney Crosby finish with 30 points or more? He's got 12 now.
And they have 14
games
left.
For Christ's sake, just a yes or no answer, man.
I'm thinking this out loud, man.
No one said do math. You're doing math.
Yes,
he will have more than 30 points. Okay. Will the Pittsburgh Penguins catch the New York Rangers and lead the Atlantic Division heading into the playoffs?
Oh, I say yes at this point, the way they're going.
Will the Pittsburgh Penguins win a first-round matchup?
Yes.
Will they win a second-round matchup?
I don't know. We got to talk about matchups. I don't know who they might face in the second round.
Do you believe the Pittsburgh Penguins will be the Eastern Conference representative for the Stanley Cup?
Ask me in a week once we see a few games from Sid.
I don't understand why you feel the need that you need to see an audition from Sidney Crosby. He's Sidney Crosby. As Pat Brisson told the Los Angeles Times, sir, Sid wouldn't come back if he didn't know he was going to be Sid. So clearly, we can just project now that he will hoist the Stanley Cup, probably in 4 games, come June.
Right, you're right. And
no?
The Penguins didn't have a big website banner on their site this morning once the news came out. So, I guess you're right. Sure. I'd rather table the discussion for a week, because I'm sure we had the similar conversation back in December, and then 9 games later, you know, Crosby was back in the lineup. So
I refuse to table the discussion, sir. I think we are a scant 3 months away from designing the Sidney Crosby statue next to the Mario statue, because that is going to be the impact that this young man is going to have on this team. It's going to be remarkable.
Will it be him skating away from a Darian Hatcher from 2006 on a route to a hat trick, or lifting a stick in front of the Flyers goalie for a goal?
I like the idea of the Penguins creating their own Monument Valley or Monument Park or whatever the hell they call it in the Yankee Stadium, and just have a series of statues of their players and try to cram as many opponents onto each podium as they can. I like the idea of Sidney Crosby's statue being him surrounded by the entire roster of the Detroit Red Wings the year he won the cup. Actually, the handshake line. It's Sid celebrating in the corner, and then all the Red Wings on another part of the statue watching him saying, "Where's Sidney? Why isn't he shaking our hand? Is he the hubris of this young, you know, this young player?" While I still have you, sir, let's talk about rules. The GM meetings down in Boca Raton, our good friend Nick Costanica down there getting a nice tan. The GM meetings down at Boca Raton does not seem like we are going to get a hard and fast hybrid icing rule right now, but the appetite is there and the GMs want there to be some kind of a NHL-friendly version of the rule. I don't know where you stand on this. What do you think of hybrid icing?
You know, I've always been a fan of the big races to get the puck, you know, for an icing, and a lot of time to see the good team that ices the puck, their guy wins it and winds up leading to a goal. But I also do understand that the kind of injuries that can happen out of those races, like Taylor Fredin and Curtis Foster and Torrey Mitchell and guys like that, those injuries they're not just injuries, they're pretty bad injuries, catastrophic and sometimes career changing. So I understand the appetite for the hybrid icing. I'd like to see, I'm not sure why they want to do that ringette line in the AHL. I'd rather see them do this hybrid icing in the AHL for a season. Let everyone, the GM, see what it looks like for higher-level players as opposed to back in the R&D camp when they're using junior guys. See what it looks like in actual games, and that way you can get a better idea of how it will translate over into the NHL game. Obviously on the other side, you have another decision for the referees to make. It's a judgment call whether it should be a good icing or it's not going to be icing. So it's tough. But like I said, I like to see it in the NHL for a year because they're usually the guinea pig for the NHL, trying all these wacky rules. So give it to them for a year, see how it goes. And you know, if it's successful, then you know it's fine by me to bring it to the NHL level.
I'm also a fan of the big races, Boston Marathon, Kentucky Derby, Sasquatch. in that order. The thought about hybrid icing though and using the AHL as a guinea pig, I mean, it could be argued that the USHL college, there are already levels that use hybrid icing and the reviews are pretty strong. Like Mark Maxwell writing in, "I live in Youngstown and see several USHL games. The hybrid icing takes nothing away from the game, in my opinion." Now, granted, sometimes we have to realize that different levels play different ways. I mean, you know, fighting is a lot less prevalent than other levels of hockey because you don't need it as much. It's a different brand of hockey. Maybe hybrid icing works at one level, won't work in the National Hockey League. But it does seem like there are very few people saying, "No, hybrid icing blows. It ruins everything about the games that I watch." So, I mean, I guess maybe the reviews are already in that regard.
Yeah, and you read what some of the GMs are saying, and obviously, there's, like you said, there's a very strong appetite for it. It's going to get in, whether it's next season or 2 years down the line, because the GMs, they don't want that automatic icing like you have international play, because it just, you know, like I said, the races aren't there. There's still some excitement in the hybrid icing with the races, but also the element of protecting some of these guys, you know, with their health going forward, so they're not crashing into the boards and, you know, breaking legs and things like that. So I think the GMs, maybe that's why they're not putting it in the AHL for a season. They've seen on many different levels, like you said, and it doesn't really – it's not really a game killer, not really a momentum killer for the game. And like I said, I think it's only a matter of time that definitely goes through for sure.
Now, you mentioned the ringette line as far as the AHL and what they're going to be doing with it. So let's talk about that for a moment. Scotty Bowman line, ringette line, whatever you want to call it. The NHL is going to have this experimental rule that they hope the AHL will test for next season. Which is, it's a line across the top of the defensive zone circles. The team breaking the puck out can't make a two-line pass without crossing that line first. So it basically would ban the from the end boards all the way down to the opposite blue line passes that we see now. Try to allow defenses to get set, put a little bit more pressure on the passers through the forecheck. It's basically just a way to delay the long passes and create a situation where you're not going to have these home run passes from their own end all that often. But keeping the red line out, in other words, and allowing the two-line pass, you like this idea? To me, it's like another thing that complicates the game for newbie fans.
Do we need another line on the ice between the advertisements, the face-off dots, the trapezoid? It's another line.
We need a verification line behind the goal line. That's the only other line that I will allow on the ice. But yes, I will allow that. This line, I don't think I like all that much, Leahy. I have to be honest with you. I don't know if I like this line.
The way things are going, the ice is going to look like my screen when I play draw something on my iPhone with all the lines everywhere all over the place. It's just going to be terrible. And also, if you're a defenseman or forward or whatever looking to make that pass, you have to be cognizant of another line on the ice and make sure you know that your pass is going to be legal. It gives these guys another thing to worry about, another thing for referees to we're going to have debates whether the puck was over the ringette line or behind the ringette line. I mean, it's just, why are we adding another line? Why do we want to not, why do we eliminate those long passes? It just doesn't make sense to me. I think there's better, if these guys, if they don't want to do the center ice red line, they don't want to bring that back in, but they want to somehow make player safety better. How about stiffening up the penalties for suspensions? Why are we still giving guys 3 games for something, you know, for a headshot or whatever? You know, I know they said, you know, the headshots or whatever were down this season, and guys are, you know, the guys are definitely learning these rules and they're getting accustomed to these rules, kind of like what we saw at the Rule 48. Guys were really kind of adjusting as far as their approach to taking hits. But I lost my train of thought, but
that's okay. You were really rocking and rolling, and I thought it was very impressive. The thing I don't like about it, besides the name, I mean, if we're going to have this, we need to change the name into something more impressive, like the pass verification marker, or have it sponsored by someone, you know, hopefully like a home security company. The thing I don't like about it is I generally don't like when we put restrictions on what players are able to do on the ice. That's one of my major beefs with the trapezoid, and I know the trapezoid is there for any number of different reasons, but my primary problem with it is that you're telling a player he can't play the puck in a certain part of the ice, and I just have a problem with doing that, just inherently, but you know, in my tenets of hockey and what I think hockey should be, telling a player he can't play the puck in a certain area of the ice really bothers me. Telling a player he can't make a pass on a certain part of the ice until he gets to a magic line above the defensive circle is a problem for me.
Right, and you're killing creativity. These guys, you know, there's some guys
well,
that excel at it.
Leahy, the counter argument on that is that, you know, the putting the red line back in, restricting these home run passes is going to create turnovers. It's going to give defenses a chance to get set and create turnovers. So you may have more offensive creativity, especially if you're restricting these home run passes. You're going to require these players to try to do more in their own zone to move the puck up. So, I mean, I get the counter argument about creativity. I just don't like the idea of this rule.
No, I hear you. And that's why I'm also glad why they kind of scratched that whole hand pass in your own zone 2-minute penalty that Mike Gillis was kind of pushing, because the guy already doesn't have a stick. You're also giving him a 2-minute penalty for trying to clear the zone on a penalty kill.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, that's all I got, and I appreciate your time. What's your what's your thought on Avery? Retire, no retire, just spewing the bullshit on Bravo with Nicole Richie? What was he doing?
Well, I think considering he's got a good relationship with Brooks, and so I think that's for real that he, you know, he's looking forward to retiring. But also, like you said, he's going to be a free agent. I'm sure there'll be a couple teams that might sniff around on him and maybe try and get him on the cheap for a year and maybe take that chance. Although, I mean, it was only true match in the NHL was with the Rangers, and obviously this time around wasn't so successful as the first time around. So, but he's also the kind of guy, as we know, that he has many more interests other than hockey. So it wouldn't shock me if he's being actually, you know, true in this, and he's actually done with Ian forever.
Right, and obviously there's a home for him on Bravo. All right, listen, no cheering in the press box tomorrow. Thank you for your time, Leahy.
Thursday.
Well, no, go tomorrow. It's probably a lot more room in the press box tomorrow. thank you, sir. We will talk soon.
Man.
Bye. Sean Leahy of Puck Daddy. And with that, I suppose it's probably time to start the show proper.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sabine is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
La-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da-di. It's just not the same without Merrick here to talk through the intro. We always hit the intro and he's mid-story. talking about some junior player from Moose Knuckle whose dog's balls got frozen to the ice. Anyways, Merry Christmas, Chinsky. It's a Tuesday episode. Coming up, Bobby Holik. Coming up later, Nick Costanica to educate us more about what the GMs said at this meeting. There's news about the ringette line. There's news about hybrid icing. News about line changes. All kinds of stuff happening today, the second day of the GM meetings down in lovely Boca Raton. Question of the day, what do you think about icing? What do you want to do with icing? Do you like no-touch icing? Do you like hybrid icing? Do you like the status quo with the occasional broken leg or broken back? It happens once in a while. Doesn't happen every game. PuckDaddyBlog at yahoo.com. Tweet me at Wyszynski, hashtag at MVSW. Peter Cambro writes in, the pass verification line sounds like an invite for ye olde trap to make a triumphant return. I had another reader that sent in a note worrying about hybrid icing vis-a-vis the 1-3-1. Bottom line about any of these changes is that the coaches are going to find a way. That's why it makes it so hilarious that these GMs are the ones that drive rule changes. Because at the end of the day, defense wins championships. These guys are always going to find a way around the rules that they establish for themselves, be it CBA, be it salary cap, be it it's a competition. It's never going to be an even playing field. These guys are always, there's always going to be somebody smarter and ahead of the curve when it comes to rules, no matter what you do. Alex from Chicago on icing. My understanding is that under hybrid icing, the play only gets blown dead if the time the defender, but if by the time the defender reaches the hash marks, it's clear he's going to touch first. If the forechecker is in the lead or if there is a dead heat, the play continues. Correct. But these plays are never dangerous if the defender has a good lead at the hash marks, only when it's close or a forechecker negates the icing that there is a risk of injury. Hybrid icing won't do anything to make the game safer. We already have a rule that you can't make contact on an icing call, and that's good enough for me. Yeah, but people still make contact. So I think the notion of hybrid icing is that you're going to blow the play dead. It's going to be clear that someone's going to win the race. So it's almost like the race ends sooner than later. So there's not going to be jostling or a guy getting knocked off his blades or anything like that a few feet away from the boards, because the race will just be done, right? So you're shortening the track, in other words, with hybrid icing. My problem with it, again, is the subjective nature of it. I think subjective calls like this are fine in junior. They're fine in lower levels. When you get to the National Hockey League and you get to the Stanley Cup playoffs, now all of a sudden you're talking about an environment where nothing gets called at all. So if you're going to make icing subjective in certain cases where a linesman is going to either have to blow it dead or keep the play alive because he is predicting what the outcome is going to be, how confident are you that this is going to be a call that you're going to see in a Stanley Cup playoff overtime? They don't call holding. They don't call hooking. If there is a race for the puck in an overtime that in the regular season is blown dead because of hybrid icing, how often do you think that race continues just to see if somebody can make a play and win a game for his team? That's what bothers me about it. I mean, right now, it's first man of the puck. Touch the puck, no icing. Touch the puck, icing. Simple as that. Now we're going to kind of create this gray area where guys are going to be saying, I could win the race, could not win the race. He got to the hash marks first. The other guy is far enough away. I mean, it just adds so much gray area that it's troublesome. But like I said yesterday in talking about this, if the distinction is either no touch icing or this, I choose this. I don't want no touch icing. I think it's just not cool. I hate international play. I hate the whole skate around thing that happens whenever the puck goes down the ice. I don't like it. It doesn't. It's not entertaining to me. I like the status quo. But I do understand that within the status quo, you do end up with some catastrophic injuries that you may not get otherwise with hybrid icing. My solution to this is my solution for boarding, which is that you educate the players to not do things that are going to result in a guy breaking his leg or breaking his back or suffering a concussion. And I know that the education part of this thing is a lot harder than creating a rule that says just you don't do that anymore, or creating a rule where icing is taken out of the equation because the linesman is whistling it dead when you get to the circle. But for me, I rather see these guys learn and keep hitting in the game, keep hustle plays in the game and that kind of thing, than create a rule that shifts the paradigm on all of it. But that's just me. Again, I understand this, the player safety aspect of it, But I've got my druthers. What can I tell you? Peter P. writes in, the only way icing should be changed is to call icing on the penalty kill. Removing icing from the arsenal of penalty killers will increase scoring without changing goaltending equipment, net size, or through the creation and or use of other weird inventions or rules. That's an interesting one because there's been talk, and I think it was tested out at R&D last summer, of penalty killers having to skate the puck out of their own end before they could ice it. And, you know, I don't know, you know, power plays are kind of interesting. I was just reading a piece about, how the power plays are down dramatically since the lockout. Obviously when they came back from the lockout, they were calling everything. So there was just a rash of power plays. But this notion of, you know, power plays being the way to more scoring and should there be more of them and should it become easier to score? It's interesting to me. I've always been fascinated because as an American fan, I constantly hear about scoring and numbers and our society being numbers obsessed and ESPN and why can't it be more like basketball and yada, yada, yada. And an easy way to juice the stats is to increase the number of times a team scores in the power play. That's why I've always been kind of fond of the idea that Lou Lamoriello has put forth now and again about the 2 minute major penalty. Every time there's a power play, you get one for 2 minutes. Score as much as you want. I kind of dig that. But the idea of making it more difficult to kill a penalty by either taking icing out of the equation or making it more difficult to ice, I'd like to see that tested. I'd like to see that tested. It'd be kind of interesting. Joining us now on the line, a man who knows more about hockey than I do, which is why I'm going to talk to him. He is a former member of the New Jersey Devils. I won't list the rest of the teams. They don't matter. He is Bobby Holik, and he's back on Merrick vs. Wyshynski, sans Merrick. How are you, Bobby?
I'm very good. How are you, Greg?
I'm fantastic. What do you think, sir, of the 2 minute major, of getting rid of minor penalties where the penalty is over once the team scores a power play goal, you play the full 2 minutes, score as much as you want?
I think it's a good idea. I was always proponent of the rules. First of all, I dislike the trapezoid because it limits the goaltenders. You know, Marty Brodeur worked all his life to be a best puck handling goalie, if not ever, of his era. And they put a trapezoid in because other teams can't get a goalie like that. So I dislike rules that limit somebody else's talents and skills. So you get a 2 minute major, you put your best power play players out there, you put your best penalty killers out there, and you let them go at it. That's a display of skill. You allowing them, you giving them opportunity to be great at what they're supposed to be great at. So I have no problem with that. It's actually a fairly clever idea. And again, I like it for one reason, one reason only. There's no limitation to anybody's talent and skill. You're just letting players excel at whatever they're good at.
Yeah, and I think if you want to talk about, you know, there being too many penalties called, or do teams suffer the consequences enough when one of their guys draws a call? You know, if they got to be out there for 2 minutes, and you're going up against the team with the best power play in hockey, and they could put 3 goals on the board in the span of 2 minutes, well, then you're going to think twice about taking a penalty, aren't you?
You're going to play a better game. You're going to play smarter. You're going to play a better position. What if, you know, you're talking about penalties like hooking or tripping or interference. Well, obviously, you always step behind, or you're not in the right position. So that's, you're going to prepare better, and you're going to try to be better team or a better player not to take those penalties. And again, it's, you're not limiting anybody, you're just giving players the opportunity to excel. And it's very interesting. I would love to see the stat. I'm sure somebody's got the time to do it. That I think the better teams in the league are the less penalized teams, and there's a reason for it, because they control the puck, they control the games. I mean, maybe not this year, but in general, in hockey or in sports in general, they, you know, the better teams pay less of a price for penalties.
Well, for sure, and especially if they're puck possession teams. I mean, the Red Wings most years are like Lady Bing on skates, and they're a team that likes to keep the puck and control the puck and control tempo. So I think you're onto something there. You played in both eras, two line pass allowed, two line pass illegal. You watch a shit ton of hockey. Do you agree with the notion that the allowing the two line pass has made offense kind of lazy, that it's just a bunch of long lead passes and chips into the zone, and creativity has suffered because they allow the two-line pass?
I agree with that. It's not, and again, we're talking, we have to separate the teams, the good coaches, good players from the rest. And there's all, every every year, every season, there's not 30 good teams or 30 good coaches. There's a handful of them, half a dozen, who are really good at what they're doing that year. And if year after year, it might be different half a dozen teams, maybe different half a dozen coaches. But I agree with that. It almost destroyed creativity, and I experienced it against Atlanta. Our play was get the puck in our end and shoot it as far as we could for a tip. It almost takes creative spirit away from the players, too. They become robots because the coaches demand it. Keep it simple, off the wall, off the glass, long bomb up to the far blue, tip it in forecheck. I'm like, there's a little better, more efficient way to play, like we've seen the Red Wings play or the Vancouver's playing now or, Pittsburgh, the puck position teams, the talented. But it takes, knowledge and skill to build a team like that, and not all teams are like that, so they have to resort to that less creative. The long pass up to the far blue line, or basically slap pass or slap shot pass, is basically on the when you control the puck was the same thing as some less talented teams play the trap. No, New Jersey Devils, the less talented teams resorted strictly to basically clogging up the neutral zone, and that's equal to the long bomb to the far blue line, and it's again restricts the creativity and ruins the game.
That's interesting. So offensively, the long bomb passing is as morally bankrupt as the trap. I think that's a selling point you could probably convince a few people on, Bobby, right there. As far as the player safety aspect of it, though, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about putting the red line back in as a way to reduce concussions, as a way to reduce the speed and the power of the forecheck that comes in and the collisions that we see along the end boards. Do you see that the legalized two-line pass as being a thing that's made the game a little less safe?
No, it's a combination of the declining obstruction or try to eliminate obstruction and the evolution of the salary cap that brought in far more young players, less skilled but cheaper labor to many of the teams. And so the game became what we just talked about a few minutes ago. Shoot it up the ice and chase it down. And for I'm not talking about all the teams. The teams who win, who succeed, play real good games, entertaining, exciting. But there's just too many teams with, whether it's the coaching or lack of talent or lack of direction, lack of structure, whatever it is, they resort to just running and hitting. And I don't think it's the two-line pass that caused it or elimination of it's the elimination of obstruction and introducing so many young players to the game because of out of economic necessity.
Right. Bobby Holik joining us, of course, NHL great. You and I have talked previously about Ilya Kovalchuk and sometimes about the deficiencies in his game and sometimes about the things he does quite well. It does seem like there's something here this year where he has found a balance between offense and defense, where he has been a difference maker and where he legitimately could be an MVP candidate this year. What have you seen out of Kovalchuk, and are we right to buy into him being an MVP this year?
I wrote a blog about it on my website, and I think the turning point was Jacques Lemaire being rehired last year after a terrible start by, Coach John McClain. I think that was the whole team, the players hit rock bottom, and, that was a great opportunity for Jacques Lemaire to, I don't think he did it any strong way, but he's got that presence. He knows the game better than anyone I've met. And I think Ilya learned from him, from being around Jacques Lemaire and listening to him and being coached by him for about 3 months, three, 4 months last year, what it's going to take. And I'm not saying he's there, but he's made a great progress in becoming a more complete player. And what I like about him now, he makes other players on the ice better. In the past, he always put up his points, but it was just him. The team wasn't doing well. Now, his line, whoever's on his line, it's been Adam Henrique and Zach Parise, they're good players on their own. But they are one of the most dangerous lines in hockey now. And that's, you got to give him the credit because he's become a better player, more complete. His positioning on the ice, getting open, passing the puck, not as the last option, but in one of the first options, putting your line mates in the position to do something with the puck. All those little things I wouldn't rule it out, but I think it's coming from Jacques Flamel's teaching.
I got to be honest, as a Devils fan, you know, I've sort of resigned myself to the idea of Zach Parise leaving after this year. I just get the feeling that this is the end of the road between him and the team. And the way Kovalchuk's played this year almost gives me hope. It gives me hope that there is something still there with this team, even without Parise. And I didn't feel like that last year. I felt that if Parise left, this was going to be watching Ilya Kovalchuk be a disappointment for the next 14 years or until he retires. But it's almost like, you know what, Kovalchuk, Eliash, Henrique, some of the younger guys, Parise's been a little bit of an afterthought this year, I think, for this team.
Well, you look at it as, I look at it this way. Zach Parise can see a potential in having some winning team, being part of a winning team, or the Devils can look at it that they don't really need, I'm not saying Zach Parise, but Zach Parise at the asking price he's going to be asking after having
right.
such a strong year. So do you spend X amount of dollars on Zach Parise, or you can go out and get yourself one or two more puck-moving defensemen, because I know Zach's going to be asking for a lot of money. And I have no inside information. I'm just guessing because he's playing well. He's been great captain all year. And there's going to be the free agent market is very, very there's nobody out there from
right.
true great players. So the play of Ilya Kovalchuk might allow the Devils part way with Zach Parise, even though Zach Parise might think that, you know, this could be a team to be on, but you just never know what happens after in July 1st. Let's not forget, Travis Zajac, when he comes back, that's another quality first or second line player that they have in reserves right now. So they're loaded with top six forwards.
And hey, if anyone knows from players asking for some money as a free agent, Bobby Holík, it's Bobby Holík.
That's right.
As we all know.
To go through it.
As we all know. Hey, two teams I wanted to ask you about specifically, insofar as whether or not their windows have closed in winning a Stanley Cup. The Washington Capitals, the San Jose Sharks, both teams struggling right now to try to make the playoff cut. What are your thoughts on both of those teams? Is one more likely than the other to make the playoffs, and do you think either has a chance to win the Stanley Cup with this group?
I think they both likely to make the playoffs. I think Washington is a little closer to making playoffs than San Jose, because the bottom, like the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 spot in our West is just too tight. And Washington, in that sense, I think that Washington has a better chance. But I wouldn't rule out San Jose Sharks, because when they're underdog, they perform a lot better than when they're a favorite. Every time they're a favorite, they disappoint. When they're underdog, they're a very good team that could surprise many.
Mm-hmm.
So, and winning the cup, anything can happen. But right now, when I look at those teams, there's probably 6 to 8 teams that will qualify for the playoffs who are better. But again, you have to, once the regular season ends, if you want to win, you have to win 16 games. So everybody starts with zero, and it's going to be with Sharks getting or the Capitals getting, they'll be in the same position as Vancouver or the Rangers or Boston. They're going to have 0 wins at the first starting the playoffs. So that's pretty much it. I think San Jose, yeah, underdogs, they'll do better. If they're favorite, for whatever reason, they don't have the players to handle the, you know, to be the favorite. And Capitals, you just never know. They still have the ability to make it and make some noise.
Last one, sir, and I thank you for your time today. Where do you feel the wind's blowing on this CBA stuff? You think we're going to have a little work stoppage next year, or do you think that these guys are going to be able to come together and we won't miss any time next season?
I think the first part of the season, I was not too positive about anything. I thought it's going to get ugly before it gets better. But I have a feeling that but October, November, I was very, very negative looking on the outlook for next season. Now I'm about 50-50. That doesn't say that's going to happen, but I think people might be coming to their senses, whoever's in charge, and they will try to do their best. But it always takes one or two disgruntled owners who want their way, and they can hold up the process, just like, you know, group of players can hold up the process. But I think we are better off right now than we were in 2004 this time of the season.
Nice. The website is holikonhockey.com. The podcast is Holik on Hockey. You can find it on iTunes. One of our favorite people in the world, Bobby Holik. Thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
Thank you.
Bobby Holik. Someone on Twitter wanted to be a Weisenheimer and said that getting Holik's opinion on the trap and trapezoid is like asking Jesus his thoughts on Christianity. Well, true. It's still, you know, good to hear that perspective from a guy who played the trap now and again. Chris Peters on icing. I don't think we see auto icing, but I'd argue auto forces better decision making, less dump-ins, more skill through the neutral zone. And on hybrid, while safer than touch, hybrid has its faults. Two missed icing calls led to big goals in two separate college games this weekend. And on my my 2 minute major power play predilection that I'm kind of favorable about, this is from Neil. What happens in a ref happy game where each team gets five or six power plays? Literally a period of special teams, game is best 5-5. Well, that's the pessimistic view, sir. The optimistic view is that there'll be fewer penalties if you have 2 minute majors, because teams wouldn't want to put them, players would want to put their teams at such a terrible, terrible disadvantage. Adam Walsh on icing. Ask Curtis Foster's leg and it will answer no touch. And Brian Murphy, I think that icing should have the following changes. No touch, one injury a season is too much. If the offending team lines up incorrect players after an icing or takes more than 20 seconds to line up, delay of game 2 minutes, second offense in a game, 5 minute major. 5 minute major with a coach ejection. Jeez, draconian, sir. The puck must be touched to avoid icing call. No attempts, no intentions, only results. I just don't like no touch. I mean, I know the injury thing is like extraordinarily compelling as to why there should be no touch icing. I just can't do it, man. I just I don't find it pleasing. Like I said earlier, keep it in international hockey, do what you will. I just don't dig it. Thank you so much, by the way, everybody who checked out Puck Daddy today and read the article on the dude who invented the Buffalo Slug. The dude who invented the Buffalo Slug. Buffalo Slug is, as you know, the logo for the Buffalo Sabres that they had from 2006 to 2010. We had a big, long article, some might say too long, on the origins of the Buffalo Slug, the guy who helped design it, invent it. And my takeaway from this interview with them, and you can read the story on Puck Daddy this morning, I kind of felt a little guilty. Like, he talked about the fact that the Buffalo Slug logo didn't get a proper rollout. It was leaked. It was leaked to a Buffalo Sabres blog, and then it made its way through the internet, made its way through message boards, and everybody kind of passed judgment on it before Reebok, the Sabres, the designers, the NHL, could say word one about what this thing was supposed to be. And I'm Puck Daddy. We've leaked a few things of our own, bodily fluids being the primary source, but we've leaked some jerseys and some logos and some things of that nature. And I kind of felt a little guilty about the idea that, like, when we published the New York Islanders third jersey before the Islanders have a chance to come out and say, hey, here's why we made this horrendous frock. Here's why it's black. You know, they don't get their say. They don't get a chance to present their case before the court of public opinion already passes its verdict. I kind of felt guilty for the designer, you know, as a fellow quasi-creative type. I kind of felt guilty about how the designer feels, because in talking to him last night, it's pretty obvious that this guy went through hell when this thing leaked, and everybody and their mom came out and said, it looks like Donald Trump's hair. It looks like an angry cashew nut. And I felt kind of guilty about the whole thing, but do check out the article. It's good times. But joining us now on this cavalcade of guests, because I simply don't want to carry the show on my own shoulders, he is down in Boca Raton. He is at the GM meetings. He is Nick Costanica of Yahoo Sports. Hello, Nicholas.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Your thoughts on the Ringette line, the Scotty Bowman line that will prevent two-line passes potentially if it goes to the AHL and they like it?
I think it's interesting. I'd really like to see how it really works. You know, I just called Scotty a few minutes ago, and I got a 20-minute sort of explanation from his mind. And it's funny. You remember that show, like, Making the Cut, that they had, like, during the lockout. He said it kind of goes back to that. When they were doing the show, apparently they put the ringette line in there. And his idea was they were, you know, were talking about taking the red line out, and he'd always thought that this would be interesting. So they tried it, but the players weren't very good. So I think he's like everybody else and wants to see whether it'll have the desired effect. And that's to encourage forechecking. Like, if you're going to force the defensive team to make it to that line before they can make that stretch pass, you're not as apt to sort of sit back, and you might want to attack that, attack those defensemen and make them, work the puck up to that line. So it's interesting in theory, but, you know, we'll see how it will work in practice.
That's interesting, because I thought it might work the other way, where if you're requiring these players to now get to a certain point on the ice before they can fire a pass, you're allowing, and this might kind of tie into the forechecking aspect of it, you're allowing defenses a little bit more time to get set versus always being on their heels chasing home run passes down the ice.
Well, and that's why you got to see how it really works, because the idea is that you won't want to sit back, because you're going to want to attack that guy, because they have to make it up there before they can make the stretch pass. So you're not vulnerable. You don't have to sit back, because you're not worried about the puck getting in behind you and just tipped by you, right? So, you know, instead you're going to attack. But I still think, I mean, you're still, just like before, you can throw the puck up the wall and tip it at the red line. There's nothing to stop you from doing that. So, right. You know, coaches are real smart, and I'm sure that they'll find a way to screw this one up, too.
always the optimist, you. So that was interesting news. So the plan is they're going to ask the AHL to install it next year, and then we're going to see where it goes?
Yeah, I mean, they still have to jump through that hoop. I mean, they can ask the AHL. The AHL has to put it through its competition committee, and the AHL might say, no thanks. I think if the NHL asks you to do it, you do it, but they still have to kind of get it through that that process first.
And I'd say about 80% of the stuff they test in the AHL actually does make it to the league. There's not everything that goes to the AHL makes it to the league, but most of the stuff does. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Icing discussions today. What happened with hybrid icing when the GMs met today?
Well, they're going to recommend that to the competition committee. The biggest issue with that right now is just sort of refining the language for the NHL, sort of, you know, what's a tie, who wins the race, that type of thing. Like, you know, are we going to have guys, you know, racing to the dots and sticking out their sticks, and Zdeno Chara always wins because his stick is longest? You know, like, they're trying to kind of figure that one out. But basically the feeling is that hybrid icing is the time has come. And so they just got to get the language right for the NHL and send it to the competition committee.
Ugh, you know, it didn't even occur to me that it's going to be two guys sticking out their sticks trying to get to that imaginary line first.
Right. Ugh. You know, and I think that that does happen in the USHL. I don't watch a lot of USHL games, so I don't know, but I've heard that kind of talk, you know. So I think they just got to make sure that they have their, you know, I's dotted and T's crossed in the way they want it first.
Well, that'll be glorious when Sidney Crosby breaks up an icing with his stick and they decide to make a statue out of it. It'll be two guys lunging with their lumber towards the imaginary line when they put it next to the Mario statue. Very, very cool. What are some of the other things that the GMs were bandying about today at their little meeting?
Well, one was the exciting attainable pass. So that was the other concrete thing that kind of came out of today. They're going to recommend to the competition committee that next year there will be no attainable pass. So if you go to ice a puck, there's going to be no judgment by the linesman. Well, he could have got that. That was a pass. You know, you have to make contact with your stick to negate an icing. And basically, I think the feeling is that it's kind of gotten out of hand, and judgment varies, you know, widely between officials. So they kind of want to get rid of that. You know, they did talk about the red line. They did talk about the trapezoid. They did talk about some of those other things, but none of that really got any support. So really, those are the three main things. The other big thing is obviously Radulov. You know, Bill Daly told me, he said he was at the bar last night, and a few GMs kind of raised, you know, concerns about the Nashville Predators possibly getting, another boost before the playoffs here. But really, it's all, you know, competitively based. You know, I think the league feels this is a unique situation where the player left on his own, and it's sort of up to the club whether the club wants to take him back at this point in the season, and he should be able to play in the season and the playoffs if the club wants him to.
All right, I mentioned that earlier too. It's also a case where they weren't trying to stash him over there a la Ray Ruotsalainen with the Oilers. I mean, they wanted him back. They actually went over and kind of courted him a little bit. He didn't want to come back, or the KHL or you know, the guys in the dark sunglasses carrying the Soviet era Glocks weren't going to allow him to come back. But it's a different situation than trying to stash a salary or stash a player over there or have him play against weaker competition like Ruotsalainen. So I imagine there was going to be pushback from the other GMs, but I at the end of the day, I can't imagine they're going to be all that upset about this.
Well, I think, you know, talking to Doug Armstrong, obviously he has strong feelings about it. And the way that they sort of spin it is, you know, the player wins all the way around here. You know, he got to break his contract. He got to go to Europe. Got to make a ton of money in Europe. And now that it suits him, he gets to come back and burn a year of his contract for only a matter of weeks. You know, so the player wins all the way around, and that's a bad precedent to set. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's up to the Nashville Predators. You know, they don't have to take him back. They can say, no, pause off.
Right.
You know, we want you to play a full year, so you come back next year. But Poile was saying, like, look, you know, there's obviously the desire to win the cup now, but there's also, you know, you have a better chance of maybe convincing him to stay if you sort of play along and play nice. You know, so it might work out for them, you know, at another level in the future.
I guess it is kind of horseshit that, like, 13 games can burn off a year of your contract. Like, eligibility for playoffs and for regular season is one thing, but the notion that his contract after, like, 13 games could be fulfilled is a little bit outlandish, I guess.
Yeah, and Stan Bowman said the same thing. I think that's your biggest worry, is that you're setting this precedent that, you know, you can just kind of go play in Europe, and, oh, I'm going to come back to the playoff push, so I'll come back now, and it'll eat up that year. But I do think it's an isolated thing, and I would imagine that all of this is going to be discussed in collective bargaining to try to close some of these loopholes.
That's interesting. Anything that you thought would be talked about at these meetings that wasn't?
Not really. I mean, they did talk about the red line. You know, I guess I was a little surprised that there wasn't a little bit more support. Just judging from, you know, some of the interviews I've done over the last few weeks, just talking to people, I think there's coaches have varying opinions on it. And there might even be more coaches who are interested in bringing back the red line than GMs. You know, I think everything was discussed here that you thought. Most of it is stuff that's been discussed in the past. You know, but if you're a fan, you know, or if you're, you know, one of the anti-fighting crowd, I mean, stuff like fighting wasn't discussed. Stuff like, you know, total ban on hits to the head was not discussed, wasn't even on the agenda. I think, you know, the GMs are at the point where they've made some pretty major changes the last 2 years, and now they're looking at sort of smaller things. They generally like the game the way it is.
Right. And then finally, because you've done ridiculously good work on concussions in the last 2 years, the information that came out yesterday about concussions basically being a flat line year to year for the National Hockey League, how did you interpret that?
Well, and I talked to Bill Daly today, and I said, you know, look, Bill, why don't you give us the numbers? You know, why don't you just give us the raw data? You know, I mean, they have their reasons for not giving it to us. And, you know, it's sort of like, trust us, you know, like we're telling you the truth. But then I might be naive, but it's not in their interest to have guys hurt. And I do think that they're telling us the general truth and that it is flat. And the way to read it is, look, it's not good. It's a dramatic jump over 2 years ago. But mm-hmm. we, you know, the league is diagnosing concussions much more aggressively, and man games are way up because they're treating it more conservatively. And some guys really skew the figure, you know, when it's Crosby and Pronger being out really, you know, for really long absences. So I think it's a step in the right direction. It's sort of stabilized. And you'd like to think that the real concussion number, whatever it is, will decrease in the future as player behavior changes. But, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, concussions are here to stay. I'm sorry. And there is a point where hockey's hockey, and these guys are bigger, stronger, faster than they ever were, and they're not going to get smaller, weaker, and slower. They're just not. So, you know, I think what it comes down to is, you know, you make all the tweaks you can and keep the game the best way you can, and then you diagnose and treat them appropriately, and that's what you have to live with.
Indeed. All right, man. Thanks. Good, great work down there. Everybody read Nick when the column goes up later today regarding GM meetings and all of the things that we learned down there. Sir, enjoy your time in lovely Boca Raton, your remaining time there, that is.
Well, you got me out of the press room now to talk to you under the chirping birds, so now I'll go back into the air conditioning.
All right, man.
Might as well be back in the office.
There you go. Exactly. Nick Costanica, Yahoo Sports, Dan and Boca Raton at the GM meetings, where all the people are having a good time, little beverage, little golf probably. I'm talking about the media, of course, not necessarily the GMs. They're all about work. That's the show for today. We are right up against it, and unlike when my radio partner is here, as he will be tomorrow, I don't like keeping the show going for an extra half hour spinning tails. It doesn't work. Ain't because I don't have tails. It's because I like to end the show in a nice, tidy, one-hour format for you, the listener. You, the podcaster. It's a nice hour run in the morning. It's a nice hour commute at night. Elena gets to go and have lunch. She's not held prisoner. Until we get to hear the end of the story. Merrick back tomorrow. Lots of other cool stuff happening later this week. Game show Friday, obviously Friday. And thanks everybody for joining us. I'm Greg Wyshynski, Yahoo Sports. Again, always available at Wyshynski on Twitter, puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com on the email. Download this show on iTunes if you do. Stop by, drop a little note, tell us how you like it. We have now, I think we're up to 3 negative reviews. That we tell too many stories, we spend too much time on history, and someone, I think someone said that Merrick had bad breath. I don't know how they necessarily glean that through the microphone, but, you know, it is what it is. He's a vegan, so probably iron deficient. Anyways, we will talk soon. Thanks again, and have a good day. Bye. We'll be right back.